Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right, Nate, don't worry. I am not going to retire from the Bills Breakdown Podcast mid-episode here. I am here for the long haul.
I honestly have to say that is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen happen at a professional sporting event before. I don't think at any level of sports I've ever played in my life has someone on my team ever quit during the game. I don't think I've ever seen that happen before.
Yeah, it's quite an anomaly, obviously. I've never heard of that at any level. In the stadium, it was confusing because I didn't remember Vontae Davis getting hurt at all. And I remember I looked over at my dad and I said, why is Lafayette Pitts playing? Like, I never saw Davis come out of the game or anything. And it wasn't until after the game that I got on Twitter that I found out that Vontae Davis had left the game before I did.
Yeah, I mean, he apparently packed his bags and was gone at halftime. Imagine being someone, a Bills fan, you're driving down the street and you see Vontae Davis driving next to you. Like, doesn't he have a game right now? Like, that it's just, I don't know, and I still haven't decided if that says anything about the Bills or if it just says something about Vontae Davis.
I would argue it probably has more to do with Vontae Davis because this isn't a guy that has been there a while. I mean, it was his first game active with the team, and I don't know. I think they've done a decent job of trying to bring in good character guys. I think that was just poor contract negotiating on the part of Brandon Bean to basically guarantee Davis most of his salary if he made the team, and now he's made off with about $4 of the $5 million of his contract playing for two quarters.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that you can certainly be critical of the Bills front office. Their free agent signings they made this offseason didn't really seem to pan out for the most part already, and it's only week two of the regular season. I mean, two of their bigger free agent signings are no longer on the team.
Yeah, that seems to have been a problem the first couple years. They didn't have a lot of cap space to begin with. That was a complete mess from Doug Whaley. So I get that they haven't been able to swing for the fences with big free agents, but I mean, when you spend on older guys that used to be big names and give them, you know, moderate level contracts relative to, you know, what premier guys are getting now, that's the risk you have to be willing to take. And unfortunately, it just hasn't worked out for them yet.
Yeah, I mean, and one thing I will say is it seems, especially the way that McDermott is talking to the media, that the Bills are really, for the first time in, I don't know, let's say 19 years, 20 years, going for that full rebuild that they've probably needed. And as part of that, you obviously expect that maybe some of your, you don't really want to sign that free agents like Vontae Davis if you don't think the guy's going to buy into the rebuild. And that's, I think, just something that they didn't necessarily flesh out when they made that signing.
Yeah, so let's get into the game a little bit here, Nate. We'll keep this short. But a lot of the national media is just kind of acting like the Bills are a complete laughingstock. I mean, they were down 28-6 at half. But look at what they did in the second half. They outscored the Chargers 14-3, and they held the Chargers' offense to under 70 yards in the second half. And I think a good portion of that credit goes to Sean McDermott for recognizing that Leslie Frazier was not cutting it as the defensive play caller. He took it over himself, and the defense, dare I say, was borderline dominant there in the second half.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference of the defense from the first six quarters to the last two quarters of the season was the aggressiveness. I think McDermott was way more willing to be aggressive with his play calling than Leslie Frazier. You especially saw this in week one, especially the first half of week one, where the Bills would just sit in these cover three shell defenses and just basically give the Ravens, and the same thing in the first half this past week, give them all the space underneath over the middle of the field to throw the football. And that's where a lot of the damage was done. And when they stopped doing that as much and weren't so predictable in the second half with McDermott calling the plays, we all saw the difference on the field.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the difference you get when you're getting pressure with your front four and you're bringing an extra rusher occasionally to kind of keep the opposing quarterback on his toes. I mean, when Frazier was sitting there in those soft cover twos and cover threes, you can't expect to be able to be successful with that with a quarterback like Phillip Rivers, especially when you're not getting any pressure whatsoever. I mean, he's just going to carve you apart. I mean, Joe Flacco did it, and Phillip Rivers is infinitely better than Joe Flacco, you know, despite Joe Flacco having a ring. But, I mean, Rivers just carved them up in the first half, and he struggled in the second half, you know, relative to how Phillip Rivers usually plays.
Yeah, so I think the big question for me with this defense going into week three is which defense is going to show up in week three? Because if the second half defense shows up for the entire game, I think we're going to see a very different Buffalo Bills team and a very different outcome in week three against the Vikings. If that defense shows up all game, they will, I think, at least put themselves in a position to be competitive in the second half, which they have not done yet this year.
Yeah, and Nate, we were talking before we started recording here. It felt like the Bills were just one big play away on offense, especially, or maybe just a turnover on defense, you know, in their own territory, or with the Chargers in their own territory, where they could have set themselves up to score and make it a one-score game. And then I don't think people are laughing as much at the Bills right now as they are today. I mean, Josh Allen had a couple really silly interceptions, and I'm not going to rag on him too much for that, but it was his first career start. But he has to be smarter. He has to learn to throw the ball away and not try to be a hero when there's nothing there. And I think if he can kind of pull that together a little bit, they're going to be competitive against good teams like Minnesota and Green Bay if the defense plays well and if Josh Allen can avoid those really costly mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And I think that Josh Allen looked like he knew what he was doing, which for me is a pretty big step, A, from Peterman, who looked like he did not know what he was doing, and B, for your rookie quarterback, first-round pick, who everyone thought was the least prepared guy for the NFL of any of the top quarterbacks in the draft, to go out and look like he knew what he was doing in his first game. That's a positive for me. I mean, I'm still not sold on Josh Allen, but he made me feel better outside of those two really bad interceptions. The first one was especially bad. The first one is one of those throws he knows he was trying to be a hero. And I've talked about this. We've talked about this a lot in our pods leading up to the regular season, that that's one of Josh Allen's potential flaws in the NFL, is that he tries to play hero ball too much. And he played hero ball a couple times on Sunday. It worked really once on that deep bomb to Zay Jones, but the other times, not so much. And I think he just needs to learn to pick and choose his spots of when he can and cannot do that. And those mistakes that we saw, those interceptions, will go away.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good summary, Nate. And there's a lot of things mechanically that they need to fix with Josh Allen. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to do that this year. And one of them for me, just sitting in the stadium, I haven't even got to see it on broadcast or All-22 yet, that's he tends to shuffle his feet around and not really set himself a lot of the time when he's trying to throw the ball. And we saw that on some plays where receivers were wide open and he either missed them completely or, you know, made it really difficult for an open receiver to make a play. I think Marcus Murphy wide open, like into the flat on one, I can't remember the exact play. I'm pretty sure it was Murphy, where he was wide open and Josh Allen just missed him when there was no defender in the vicinity. So, and I think that was in large part because he was still moving his feet around everywhere instead of just kind of setting his feet and squaring up to where he's trying to throw the ball. That's something, you know, that's valuable when you're under pressure and you don't have time to set your feet. But it seems like he's seeing ghosts in the pocket sometimes, and, you know, anticipating pressure when there's none there. And that's something that I think will get better with experience.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think one of the things that the Bills can do better next week to set him up for some more success is to give him more of those short timing throws instead of asking to throw the ball on the field, all the time. I think if you can give him the opportunity to make to take those two, three-step drops on a first down and throw a quick out or a hook or something like that for 5 to 7 yards, that will put him in a better position on second and third down, and also just give the team better options. Because that's one of the things that they've struggled with the first 2 weeks is they just put themselves in these really long third down situations. And if you're going to ask a Josh Allen to convert 3rd and 9, 3rd and 11, 3rd and 13 all the time, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, and I agree with that, Nate. Get some. He does tend to struggle on those short throws. That was kind of what the book was on him in the draft process. If you can get him going with a few of those, I think that helps him get some confidence and then start opening up down the field. Unfortunately, the Bills don't have the luxury that the Chiefs do with Patrick Mahomes of having Tyreek Hill, Sammy Watkins, Travis Kelce, Kareem Hunt, you know, just all these weapons. I mean, right now it looks like his best weapon is probably Zay Jones outside of LeSean McCoy. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin and Charles Clay have been nowhere to be found on the field. I mean, they've effectively been Vontae Davis in the second half.
I will give Benjamin some credit because the touchdown catch was a pretty nice play. I mean, it was a great throw. Don't get me wrong. It was a great throw by Josh Allen. It was also a pretty nice play by Benjamin in the back of the end zone. And those are the kinds of throws. Like, that throw for me kind of encapsulated what I expect to see all the time from this kid at quarterback is in the red zone like that, to make a throw in between two defenders into the back of the end zone for a touchdown, that's a throw not many quarterbacks can make consistently, and that's why the Bills drafted a Josh Allen.
Yeah, he's definitely a work in progress, and it's exciting to see him make those really good plays that not many guys in the NFL can make. And it's also understandable when he makes those really silly decisions. You know, we knew that would be the case with him coming out because he played at Wyoming with a complete, you know, lack of talent around him. And he's almost in the same situation at the NFL level right now with the Bills. There's not a ton of help on offense. The offensive line hasn't been completely terrible like I anticipated them to be. They've been better than that, but they've still been far below league average, I would say. And Brian Daboll in the press conference today on Monday actually said that a majority of the sacks given up by the Bills offense so far are not on the offensive line. And I agree with him. And last week there were 6, and we counted, you know, 2.5 of them were on the offensive line. The 3.5 were on the quarterbacks. I'm looking forward to get into the All-22 tomorrow to see how many are on Josh Allen compared to the offensive line.
Yeah, and that's the thing that whether you're at the game or you're watching on TV, it's very difficult to tell most of the time whose fault the sack was. Sometimes you can tell, especially if there's just a completely blown block or something, but a lot of times it can be difficult to tell. And I am interested to see if I agree with Brian Daboll. I mean, I'm assuming I'm going to agree with him, given that he's already seen the film for the game probably multiple times. But I am interested to see if that actually is the case.
Yeah, I mean, I know for a fact that one of them was completely on Josh Allen. From my view in the end zone, I could see the strong safety inching down towards the line of scrimmage as Allen was reading the other half of the field, and he never turned his eyes back to the right to see the strong safety. I think it was the strong safety or the nickel corner. I can't remember off the top of my head, but all of a sudden they were at the line of scrimmage as he was about to snap the ball. If he had looked back to the other side of the field real quick, he could have adjusted his protection or checked out of the play, seeing that he was about to get throttled by that guy coming off the edge unblocked. And I will give him credit. On that play, he went straight down. He didn't try to avoid the guy or throw the ball quickly. He just took his lumps and didn't make a turnover there. And when he got up, he motioned to the offensive line and touched his chest, saying, "That's on me." And he was absolutely right. It was his fault.
And that's one thing I really like about Josh Allen is the way he interacts with his teammates and the way he goes about playing the game. You saw throughout the game yesterday him trying to motivate the defense, get the defense to step up and make some plays. And I was joking that the second half, the reason the defense played well is because Josh Allen got in their face about it at halftime. But that's the kind of stuff that I really like seeing from a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, it was encouraging for me. I didn't see that at the game. I ended up seeing it afterwards. And watching him, trying to fire up the defense, it almost kind of reminded me a little bit of Phillip Rivers, attitude and leadership style. I know a lot of people don't like Phillip Rivers because he gets really fiery on the sideline, but I like it. I love seeing guys play with like that childlike passion for the game. And it's exciting to see the Bills have that kind of a guy that veterans are flocking around. I mean, he's like 21 years old, I think. So it's encouraging. I think you're right, Nate. He is the leader of this franchise, and it's great to see the guys gravitate towards him. And hopefully, things start to gel together over the next few weeks, and they can string together some wins.
Yeah, I mean, at this for this season for me, I'm not as worried about wins and losses necessarily as I am about Josh Allen particularly, and continuing to improve each and every week. You don't expect a guy like that to be great as a rookie, but you want to see him get better, and you want to see the young guys on the Bills just get better. They're very clearly going through their first actual rebuild in quite a long time, and it's going to be painful. It's going to be painful, and we have to find the things that matter during rebuild, and those kind of things to me are the play of the rookie quarterback, the play of some of the young players on defense like a Tremaine Edmonds and a Matt Milano, rather than the wins and losses during the season.
Absolutely. I think, Nate, you and I both said they're probably going to start at least 0-4. And if they can go into Minnesota and Green Bay and be competitive and see some growth from those younger players, that's great. We're not expecting them to make the playoffs. But we did go and look down through the remaining schedule after those first four games. And you can say that 9 of those 12 are games they could win. They're not just an outright, like, double-digit underdog. And obviously, they're not going to win all 9 of those. But if they can, show some fight and win 4 or 5 of those games, still pick in the top 5, I'd be pretty happy with that. Because, I don't know, I just, this team feels a lot to me like the 2016 Bills, where they started 0-2 and everyone had written them off. And they fought back. Rex Ryan ended up getting fired, but they ended up winning, I think, 7 games that year. And it looked like it was going to be a disaster after 2 weeks. But seeing how the team played in the second half against the Chargers, I don't think this is going to be like a 1-15, 2-14 team if they play like they did in the second half against the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. If the Bills play like they did in the second half against the Chargers, the Cardinals are very clearly the worst team in the NFL, and the Bills are going to be at least competitive the rest of the season. And that's really what I would love to see for the last 14 games is just being competitive. And if they have put themselves in a position where they have a chance to win the game in the second half, or they're close enough where if they make a few plays, they could win the game. That's the kind of thing that you want to see out of a team going through a process like the Bills are going through right now.
All right, Nate. So before we do our wrap up, tell the listeners what things you're going to be looking for in the All-22 tomorrow.
So I think the biggest thing I'm going to be looking for is I'm going to be watching Josh Allen and how often, A, he looks uncomfortable in the pocket, and B, how he does scanning the field and finding the right option. Because what I saw on the broadcast, at least, is that certain plays he looks great and you can tell he's going through his reads, and other plays he kind of gets lost a little bit. And I want to see if we can kind of flesh out why he's getting lost or what causes him to get lost. Because when he goes through his reads and the perfect example for me is the touchdown pass to Kelvin Benjamin. Kelvin Benjamin was not the number one option on that play, but he read the field left to right, came back to him, fired a missile for a touchdown. That's the kind of play that I like, that kind of encapsulates what Josh Allen can do. The second thing I'm going to be watching is the offensive line. Brian Daboll, like we mentioned, said today that the quarterbacks have been responsible for more than half of the sacks this season. It's not all been the offensive line's fault, and I want to see if that matches up on film. And then the third thing I want to see is I want to see the difference in the defense between the first and second half. I want to see what McDermott was doing so much differently than what Leslie Frazier was doing. I mean, you can kind of see it on the broadcast where they were clearly being more aggressive, but I want to see just exactly what difference in play calling McDermott had compared to Frazier, because Frazier, we saw, was basically sitting in these shell defenses, and while McDermott likes to play the zones, he clearly was making Phillip Rivers at least a little bit uncomfortable. So those are my, what I have three things that I'm watching on the film. What are you going to be watching on the L-22 film, Alex?
Yeah, number one for me, always, regardless of the outcome of the game, is going to be both offensive and defensive line play. That's something I tend to kind of gravitate towards watching on my first watch through of the film, is particularly the overhead view, is I'm going to be looking at, okay, what offensive linemen played well, what guys played terrible, you know, try to pick out some of the things that they struggle with, particularly what they ask Ryan Groy to do, if he's always, you know, kind of helping the guards, or they're asking him to win one-on-one matchups. On the defensive line, I want to see the difference in intensity from the first to the second half, because I feel like that may have been a big factor alone, not even, you know, the play calling withstanding there. I would say it seemed like Jerry Hughes and Trent Murphy were playing a lot harder in the second half, and I think that made a difference in getting some pressure on Phillip Rivers. Number two, I want to see how Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano looked on tape. I thought they got kind of toyed with by Phillip Rivers, especially in the first half in coverage. I didn't think Edmonds or Milano looked very good, at least from inside the stadium. And I don't think they did that well against the run and covering the running backs out in the flats either. So I'm interested to see if my assumptions are true when I look at the tape. And then I guess third is going to be the same as yours, Nate. I want to see the difference in the play calling on defense from first to second half. So is there anything else you would like to add before we close this out?
I just want to say I do agree with you about looking at Edmonds and Milano, especially Edmonds. Edmonds, at least it seemed like, got absolutely abused in coverage by the Chargers, and I'm curious to see what they were doing to exploit him so much, because he obviously physically can cover everyone. It's just the more the mental aspect of things that, and that's going to come, with time, being a rookie middle linebacker in this league. But that's a very good place to watch the film. I am looking forward to watching the film and kind of seeing what we glean from it and what we think the Bills are going to be able to do going into next week, especially after that pretty good second half. That was the most encouraged I've been about this Bills team since probably the draft.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good place for us to leave off here. So that brings us to an end of the Week 2 Rapid Reaction of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I'm your co-host, Alex Pollinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
Subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast so it can help others find it. Feel free to share it with a friend. And you can follow us on Twitter @Bills_Breakdown, Facebook @Bills Breakdown. And you can send us questions, comments, feedback, anything at BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.